Hi, Robert. I don't see you, but I think you're
there.
There
we go. All right, I'm here. So okay. Welcome to another exciting edition of Cambridge Inside Out.
We're definitely inside.
I'm Robert Winters. And
Judy Nathans.
And I've been that my whole life.
Yes, so, you have.
So today, so we're now into September for real.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, and I may have to turn the heat on in my building even this week a little bit.
Well, no, it's going to go to 80 on Friday, so just...
I know. It's one of those tough times of year where the other tenants in the building may insist upon it and whatever, but we'll
see. I don't think my heat comes on until October 15th, but that's okay. I have a little heater if I need it.
Yeah. I'm just going to insist that they take the air conditioners out of the windows if they're going to be turning on the heat. So
that's right.
So anyway, so we're into September. Yes. Our local elected legislative body, the Cambridge City Council, has returned
for a long night.
Yes, for a very 1:30
in the morning. It was like 8 hours and something. Yeah.
Yeah, and certainly among other things, I think that's maybe some what we should address here this evening. Mm. It was a long agenda, as is always the case in the first meeting when they come back.
Well, there are a lot of city manager items, 23 plus. There's 2 hours of public comment. I listened to that. Yeah.
Yeah, and they're talking about changing the council rules to potentially limit the amount of time during public comment to 20 for 2 minutes per person if there's more than like 20 people.
That makes sense, because a lot of, you know, they do have communications. You can send your emails in, and a lot of those people do both. So I don't know.
And one thing that's actually, I think, a pattern that's been happening is that the practice of sort of packing a meeting on a single issue has become kind of the norm.
Yeah.
So, you know, whether it's there was a group, I thought they were going to be the dominant group, was the one who were going to talk about alternatives to using police, uniform police for traffic stops. But I didn't hear more than a couple of people to do.
No, it was mostly the arts.
Yeah, but it was primarily the arts people. At other times, it might be the bike lobby or else somebody having to do, you know, one of the various housing issues.
Right.
So the thing is,
we're all on the table, but you're right. Yeah.
Right. So it often becomes very repetitive. And, and so I can kind of see here, if you sort of leave the public comment part of things as sort of this major dominant factor, that in fact, it could just become a boring, repetitive, hot mess. And I think maybe, and what that really means is like boy who cried wolf, means that whether they're pretending to be listening or not, I don't know that people really are listening after a point. So
did you hear one of the commenters ask if once they start meeting again in person that they should continue public comment via Zoom because it had actually allowed people who could not get to City Hall to did you hear any of that, or have you heard anything?
I've heard that chatter of that in a variety of places, and I think there is some merit to the idea.
Me too. Of course, it could go on forever, but if they initiate different rules,
yeah. I think it may be kind of tied to the new norm here. I do think it's true. The thing is that going up to City Hall, I mean, for a person like me who lives two blocks away, it was always easy. But you know, you have to travel there or whatever. So I think it is a bit of a kind of a democratic step forward.
And some people might say people that don't know how to use Zoom or don't know how to use R are also going to be left out. But you know what? I don't know. I don't know what the answer is.
You know, one of the people who commented, I think it was one of the city councilors who commented later on in the meeting last night, pointed out that in many other cities, they either don't have public comment, or if they do, they even do it as a separate meeting from the main meeting. So there's a business meeting and then a public comment meeting. And I could see them sort of, you know, having a session that starts early where everybody wants to sort of put something on the record and make
sure. That's not a bad idea to separate it out.
You know, if you think about what happened with some of the committee meetings, especially having to do with the affordable housing overlay issue, of necessity, that's what they did anyway. They just had meetings that were just public comment. So they actually, for the city manager issue, which is something we should address.
Yes, we will.
They also did exactly that, you know, where they had meetings that were nothing but public comment. You know, I know because I participated in it.
Right. That's true. Because there was such interest that they separate, that you're right. And then the next meeting when they had discussion, they didn't have to deal with the public comment.
I mean, I have to say, I have a certain fondness for the good old days when, it was sort of the usual suspects were the ones who came up to City Hall. Mm-hmm. And prior to about the year 2000, you could wait until the item in the agenda came up, and then you stepped up to the microphone and got recognized. So the public comment was actually intertwined with the specific agenda items, and there was often back and forth.
I think that would be almost unwieldy given.
Nowadays, it would be an impossibility. Yeah. But as I say, in the good old days, it's something.
Well, people,
you know, I look
fondly.
Before
the internet. Yeah, the good old days.
No, it's exactly true. So,
yeah.
So we should probably address some of the particulars of what were the big things that really did happen. Sort of like news flash, right?
Right.
For those who haven't yet heard, or for those who are reading things in social media or otherwise and are getting kind of slanted accounts. So maybe we'll give slanted accounts too, but the thing is we can try our best here.
Yeah.
Arguably the two big items last night, three big items, were passing through a second reading of the affordable housing overlay.
AHO, right.
There was the matter that was made subject of the charter right at the summer meeting having to do with tapping into the mayor's disaster relief fund, specifically for the use of bailing out some arts organizations.
Right.
And I think that's an interesting discussion. It's not a gimme. That there is some real issues there.
Yeah.
And the other one was the settling of, at least in a preliminary way, settling on the city manager's contract extension.
Right.
And, you know, so that's two action items and one sort of passing to a second reading, which is not finalizing anything. So I don't know if you have any particular favorites you want to touch on.
I was disappointed back in July when that was charter righted about the mayor's relief fund by Denise Simmons, because she felt that people were being excluded from that and the arts are.
So just to give a little background on it. So I'm trying to remember if I know for sure when the mayor's disaster relief fund was first established, but I remember years ago there was a major fire.
Oh, right. Burke, the one at in East Cambridge, no? Wasn't that the
No, it predates it by a long way. So I should know, but I don't actually remember which disastrous fire it was. It may have been a long time ago when Ken Reeves was mayor that it was established, but I'm guessing that. And it was used at the time, and then it sort of existed as kind of a line item within the city, you know, the city financial structure that was available for discretionary use via the mayor's office. That's how it worked, right? But you know, thankfully we didn't have too many disasters, and even if we did have some minor disasters, nobody really thought to tap into that fund until when Louis DePasquale, as soon as he became city manager, within weeks, there was that major East Cambridge fire, and then
became first aware of it, maybe.
Yeah, so they put it back into action. It was actually a pretty good move. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know whether it was Louis who sort of said, you know, we do have this mechanism, let's do it, and they did it. Mm-hmm. And they could solicit funds. You know, normally when you have city expenditure, there's some extreme limitations and strings attached.
Right, you know, how you spend it and where it goes.
Anti-aid amendments, you know, you can't just give it away to individuals, you know, because that would be kind of, it's almost synonymous with political patronage, even if somebody was in a disastrous situation.
Right.
Also, there are things like bidding rules and whatever. You know,
so how did they get around all that?
Basically, the fund is not funded by city taxes. It's funded by donations.
It's by donations and corporate.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's
true. And so basically you put the word out there and, you know, and I don't know, I mean, I've seen it, but I think the mayor and several others are sort of let me just call them the trustees of the fund. I don't know.
But who administers it? Because people had to decide, there are applications that are made for the funds.
You know, it's laid out in the
applications.
You know, it had to be established. You know, you can't just sort of set up a charge, you know, like a slush fund, right?
Right.
So it was set up via ordinance, and but it exists independent of the city's coffers. I believe the city manager and the mayor are the sort of the principal people who make the decisions, but I'm sure there are other people who are actively tied to it, maybe even within the ordinance. And it is indeed an ordinance. In fact, that was kind of the issue. when the COVID emergency really came into being, there was a you know, they say, well, what are we going to do? We have to help out small business. We have to help out people who can't cover rents, whatever.
Right.
You can't, the city can't just sort of write a check to individuals to cover their rent. But the thing is, you could solicit donations to build up this fund. So Harvard and MIT and a few of the major
Biogen
basically poured money into this thing, and they were able to get some effect of it.
Yeah.
But the thing is, even that was kind of bending the rules. It was originally not set up for that purpose. And then this issue, and I don't know exactly, I mean, I know that what happened at the summer meeting was that the manager is the one who came forward with the amendments, the suggested amendments to basically to allow this fund to be used not only for COVID emergency relief for small businesses, but also for some nonprofit. Of the arts organizations, nonprofit arts organizations.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not 100% clear about why they couldn't just have done that in the same way they'd already made some exceptions. But
probably because, again, arts, this current climate maybe have seen as not as necessary as rent or whatever, who knows,
but we just so anyway, they felt there was this need to do this revision, these amendments to an existing ordinance to do that, and it was made subject to the charter right, you know, under state law by Councillor Simmons,
right.
Who then copped grief from a lot of people, how dare you, must hate the arts and blah 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 blah.
Well, just because there was going to be such a long time between the next meeting.
That's right.
I think people saw this more as urgent.
Right. But I think that if the city council wanted to, they could have scheduled a special meeting and then could address that. So it was certainly an emergency from certain points of view, less of an emergency from other points of view.
Right.
It was unclear when Councillor Simmons exercised her charter right, what the reason was. I thought it was, well, maybe there seemed to be just a little bit of too much freewheeling of this fund. But I think her, you know, based on things she was discussing last night, there seemed to be an issue at the fact that if you were really savvy about how to tap into it, you could sort of get to the front of the line. But if there were other people who were a little less savvy about working the strings of government, that maybe they would be left out.
Well, I guess so. But I mean, there was an application process, and there's just so many ways you can, you know, make your application go further. I don't know, but there was concerns. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's, you know, there's always this perennial issue of, does the city do appropriate outreach to people from all walks of life, all sort of demographic categories, et cetera, you know?
Right.
And so there was another order that came about as part of yesterday's agenda, asking for the city to prioritize or do concurrently
from Denise Simmons, her policy.
Yeah, with
eight,
sort of underrepresented groups. So basically it's a kind of a racial issue.
Yeah, yes. Right.
So there was either a perception of or a reality of the fact that maybe this wasn't being uniformly made available. I don't know that the actual accounting really supports that point of view. But I understand why one might want to be a little cautious about it. But I think, you know, those of us especially who frequent Central Square are very aware of how some of these organizations, whether it's dance entities or arts or Improv Boston was sort of
comedy,
the main one, I think, in this case, how they're struggling. And they may not make it till spring.
Yeah. I mean, it was Central Square Theater.
Central Square Theater.
Who are a big part of Starlight Square. Improv Boston, given a lot of free performances. So,
the big difference there, though, is it's Central Square Theater is in a building where the landlord is MIT, who basically gave rents. I don't know if they're still doing that, but the thing is, so they basically waived rents. So they were one of the best landlords of all. But they weren't the only ones who did that, by the way.
But wait a minute. So that's next door to CCTV, same building,
yes,
same owner?
Yes.
So let's move Improv Boston next to CCTV.
All right. Well, that might be, well, except that a cider bar is going in there, right?
Oh, just what we need.
Yeah, really? Well, I don't know that any new bars really are opening except in Patrick's building. But the thing is, Improv Boston is in a building owned by Mrs. Dangle and her, and the company that her and her now deceased husband maintain.
All right, you're the person that knows all this. That whole block is owned by one person?
Not the whole block. I actually, come to think of it,
The field is in the same complex, right?
Let's see.
There's a driveway in between.
No, actually, I think that is by the Dangles. I think, actually, the Dangles may actually own the whole block. It's true.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm. So, but the thing is that I think maybe they are, my recollection is that they were reasonable people, so they were probably working with the tenants. But the thing is that forgiving the rent for like the better part of a year is maybe a little too much.
Right.
So that's, therefore the clock was ticking. So.
Well, I did notice Improv Boston had for quite a few years rented at, or used a space on Bishop, is it Bishop Allen, the next, that street?
Actually it's the same building. Starlight's.
Okay, right. So they have used it as a training center for many years. And I've noticed that there's four lease on that. So they are no longer even able to use that. Even if they were to go back, they can't.
Right.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. So now, I'm trying to take the long view in not only in this specifically, but sort of more generally, which is that there's going to be a lot of disruption. There will be some closures. Some businesses, some arts organizations may temporarily or permanently go lights out.
Yeah.
But I'm also trying to now think about, well, you know, vaccine hopefully will come. The you know, tomorrow will be another day, you know, and what will happen at the back end of this tunnel? In other words, will there be opportunities elsewhere in places like Central Square where entities that seem to be going out of business will come back to life?
Okay, well, let me ask you about that. Right across from Improv Boston, who owns
empty that space? This is,
I know, and it's been empty for years. It you see someone, oh, they're going to go in. No, they're not going to go in. The only
CCTV
thing I know, that's a long time ago,
right?
But I'm saying there was supposed to be a nail thing, and then there was supposed to be a restaurant. Nothing's happened.
Right. There's the
what's
fight.
What's the story there?
They're nice enough people, but I don't think they have the best vision for Central Square.
But they don't care.
And they don't, I don't know that they don't care, but the thing is that I don't think they care enough or appreciate enough the really detrimental effect of a vacant space. It's a little bit analogous to Church Street and Harvard Square, where Gerald Chan's plans are existing. Oh. Plans,
but in the meantime, with the theater. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All of these ancillary businesses that exist up and down Church Street, which are very much dependent on people going to and from a movie theater or other entity there, they've all been struggling because this was an essential piece of their economy, the local economy there.
We
need to light up that piece of central of Prospect Street, Central Square.
Is WeWork still there? They were occupying parts of that. They're still there. They're in existence because they've been having
problems. Yeah, and the other part of that, the large building.
Right.
That's there.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's. I think it was a non-trivial issue. This issue of to what degree can you repurpose a fund set up for one purpose for another purpose? Right. I mean, like if I set up something to support the Cambridge Arts Council, and then I decided, you know, I really, really think that anti-war activity is really what's the happening thing.
Yeah, but the name of this was disaster and relief. So, everyone needs some relief. I don't know.
Right. But the thing is it may well be that it was also, when it was originally chartered, it may have been specific about fires or whatever. So.
Right. But it already was giving to small businesses, this fund, right?
I know, but the thing is that there are kind of emergency rules, like the Community Preservation Act had, which is another issue that we
came up
last night.
Yeah,
that was established for historic preservation, open space acquisition, and affordable housing.
Oh, the 80-10-10 thing.
Right. So they voted on that last night. But the thing is that the fund balance that existed in there was used for COVID related matters this year.
Oh, okay.
And the CPA fund basically got some okay with the state to do that. I don't know whether they had to pass some legislation to permit that.
So there was a lot of things that got passed this year, you know, because of the emergency.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, I'm a person who likes the color gray. You know, mm-hmm. I don't like black and white laws. I think if you bend a rule because of a situation, I'm the kind of dreadful person is okay with that, you know?
Right. There's no absolute.
Yeah. But I think that, you know, if you're going to bend a rule for too long, mm-hmm. it comes a point where you have to raise the question. So I'm glad they at least addressed this and did it, you know, kind of dotted the I's and crossed the T's on this.
Right. One. Okay.
Right. So that was a big one. We might as well mention the CPA here since it was part of that.
Community Preservation Act. Okay.
All right. So Community Preservation Act, which was established like around 20 years ago, voted by the voters of Cambridge in, I think, 1999, and then went into effect in 2000, I think. You know, so every year they voted, and it has never deviated from 80% for affordable housing, 10% for historic preservation, 10% for open space acquisition. Whereas in other communities across Massachusetts, which adopted this CPA, mm-hmm. That's actually very atypical. It's more often used for all open space acquisition and things like that. You know, so it's kind of multi-purpose. You know, I've always had a little bit of a question about the thing. Well, if it's always 80-10-10, then are you really voting on anything other than the specific projects?
Yeah.
In fact, I was so insolent as to one year go up there and propose that it be 79.99% for affordable housing and 10.01% for open space acquisition, just to prove to the public that you're capable of deviating. They never did it, of course. So there was actually some smallish group of people who were advocating having it go 60-20-20 this year. But, you know, it wasn't going to happen. And largely because the 9 people who are appointed are pretty much by agreement dating back 20 years, they're already committed to having it always be 80-10-10.
How long do they serve?
I think they serve for 5 years. I could be wrong. It could be shorter. But the thing is that, you know, there was kind of like a wink and a nod with the city council back when this was first allowed to go onto the ballot, that it would be done this way. And we've now gone on our third city manager during this era, and they've all sort of adhered to that agreement, essentially. You know, I mean, I personally, I think all such things like this, which are kind of outside the usual city budget, really should have expiration dates. Not that I want it to go away, but where it has to come up for review, be put to voters. You could make it to 3% surtax or 2% or 1%. We're 3, right? So the voters of Cambridge forevermore wanted to always be 3% surtax. Or would they want it to be 2 or 1 or have it go away entirely? You know, the voters are no longer really given a choice in this. It's sort of locked in as a permanent fixture now. So anyway, in the end, they took 18 separate roll call votes.
I know. I remember someone asking, do we have to vote on all 18? Yes.
I don't actually understand what aspect of state law requires that, but they did. And anyway, so they, you know, it's pretty much pro forma. As I often say, I don't no longer even go to those meetings because, there's nothing really being decided other than what's your favorite project to fund, you know, and other than that, the allocations are pretty much locked in. So that was another of the big items was the CPA. We're going to have to take a break in about 3 or 4 minutes
3 minutes,
So probably should mention just a couple of other things because we'll come back and we'll talk about the manager's contract, which I think is kind of a pretty serious thing. I don't think it gets a whole lot more serious than that, actually. Actually, let me just sort of say this right now, just in terms of upcoming events. So they finally put it on the agenda for a hearing schedule for September 23rd, I think at 5:30.
What's that?
Special city council meeting on the topic of charter review.
Oh, is this about Plan B or A or whatever we have? Plan E?
Well, we're a Plan E city.
All right, Plan E, I don't know.
Right, and you know, periodically people raise the issue, well, you got to get rid of that crazy system. And sometimes it's people who don't like proportional representation elections.
Right.
Sometimes it's people who don't like having a city manager form of government.
Right.
My own personal opinion, it's usually because somebody didn't get what they wanted. So therefore it's time to burn the house down for example, there's at least one city councilor who's of this mistaken belief that if there are 5 out of 9, a simple majority of city councilors, and they see, Mr. Manager, we think you should do that, that the manager necessarily must do it.
That's
right?
Not true though, isn't it?
That's not the idea of planning. Thing is, what it means is that it's a strong indication that that's what the councilors may want, but the manager still has to be a manager. And if there's a compelling reason why it shouldn't be done, the manager has the flexibility to say, I'm sorry, city council, but I really can't do that. Now, if he continues to do that in defiance of city councilors, then they can replace the manager. That's how it works.
But wouldn't that be true if he was a mayor? If they said mayor,
no, because the mayor is directly elected by the people.
So he doesn't have to answer to the city council either, does he? A mayor?
No. In state law, the city manager, once hired, though he serves at the pleasure of the city council, the city manager is effectively the mayor. In state law, if whoever it says mayor shall be blah 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 blah, it is in a city with a city a city manager form of government, that is interpreted to mean the manager shall, right?
Yeah. And we're not the only city that has this form of government.
The only one that has the full original planning structure, because we're the only one that still has proportional representation election.
Oh, right. That, right.
Otherwise, we'd be like Plan D or something like that.
Right. You're right.
Worcester, several other cities were planning cities at various times, you know.
But we're the only one with PR. That's interesting.
And we're the only one that continues to use proportional representation.
So in 9 seconds, we're going to take a break.
That's right. Right. So anyway, so that's on the 23rd. If you're interested in the issue, come to that meeting.
Okay.
So,
see you soon. We'll be right back.
See you soon. All right. Meanwhile,
I should put that down. Is that like a 5:30 meeting or something?
That is a 5:30 meeting. I believe it's on September 23rd. Wednesday, September 23rd.
Yeah, it's a Wednesday.
I can only come in. I can only arrive for the beginning of it because I'll have to teach a class at 7:20, I think. So maybe I can stick around for a little piece of it.
Charter review. So when's the last time they did something like this?
The last thing it would be even remotely comparable would be when Jim Browdy was still on the city council.
Wow.
And he and Anthony Galluccio were arguing for the value of maybe having a directly elected mayor, which would be a change in the charter. So they convened some hearings. They had Tim Murray, who was then mayor of Worcester, and the city clerk of Worcester come out to the city hall in Cambridge to sort of say how well it's worked. I went to those hearings and I kind of caught the then mayor of Worcester in a lie.
Really?
But so the thing is it happens, but usually it's because at the time, I think Anthony had wanted to be mayor again. Yeah. And this is nothing negative about Anthony. He wanted to be mayor again. And he was very disappointed that he couldn't be mayor. He thought he was the most popular person who would have been a popularly elected mayor. So he naturally thought, well, maybe I think I like the idea of a popularly elected mayor. And I think Jim did as well.
Yeah.
So they had the hearings, but ultimately they laid out all the ways in which that change could happen. But ultimately it really didn't go anywhere, you know? Hmm. So it's not unique that the discussion of charter change and charter reform comes up, but it's been a while.
Uh-huh.
I personally think that what's behind it now is honestly it's a little bit kind of trivial, you know, right now. The municipal broadband issue was sort of a big one, right, where it looked like the manager was being very reticent, not interested,
everything.
But the thing is that there were other things. People will say, what kind of a system? I was looking at neighborhood listservs. People were very upset because the manager, you know, he didn't do anything when we said you should be shutting down Memorial Drive. And,
oh, God.
And
we should talk about the shared street thing because I was interested in what the bar said.
Yeah. And I don't know if I heard, so maybe you can fill in
on those
details. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. But anyway, that was you know, so my only point really was is that it's not unique that we have this discussion about charter reform. It's new. I think it's right now that there are some, especially newer city councils, are kind of feeling their oats.
Yes.
And they just want the manager. They want a manager who will simply jump when they say
we're going to go back on.
Yeah, so we're going
on. Welcome back to our second segment.
Okay, all right.
Here we are.
Welcome to Cambridge Insider again.
But we're back. Yeah.
All right.
All right.
Yeah, so anyway, so we were discussing a little bit about the city
manager. Right, the special meeting you mentioned, right.
And a special meeting coming up about potential charter reform. So I would just simply say, if it's something that interests you, either because
tune in.
Tune in. Or
will there be public comment? It's a special meeting.
It's a special meeting. It's not a round table.
Oh, so there probably will be.
For sure. I think there would be an opportunity for some public comment.
Might be afterwards.
For topics like that, they certainly should. But they're having some sort of outside advisor people from such and such an institute about this.
Okay.
But the thing is that, you know, there are a lot of people, and, you know, that always comes up when they talk about charter change. That, you know, people say, you know, there are some distinct advantages to have a managed government, because sometimes with a strong mayor type of system, it tends to be, first off, if you're not in with the mayor, you're screwed.
Right. You know? And that's very political, how they get, you know, elected and all that. Yeah,
exactly. And often when you become mayor forever, you know, so we do have a certain amount of turnover in the position.
Right.
So I think that's a relatively good thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Though the mayors often argue otherwise. They say, you know, I only got a chance to get started. I couldn't complete my agenda. But honestly, if they were really working as a cooperative body, the agenda will continue. It doesn't, you know, the fact that there are a couple of changes in personnel in the council doesn't change the momentum of the council.
Right.
Really, at least it shouldn't. So I've never accepted that argument. And I'm personally a fan of manager form of government.
Yeah.
Though I will say, even though I'm supposedly, and I am really sort of the junkyard dog of Plan E and supporter of proportional representation elections, that there are times in these last few years when I've wondered about how well our proportional representation election system is even working.
Really?
And for me to say that is actually saying a lot, you know? I think it's twisted, and it's in large part due to the fact
because of the slates, the whole thing with slates and manipulating
the slates the slates are like single issue slates, and then and then they present themselves as though they are somehow the, you know, the Republicans versus the Democrats, when in fact it's just not true at all.
Yeah,
and if you couple that with a fair amount of voter apathy, you know, where people are not particularly aware of anything other than the most superficial level of things, you've got a pretty bad system there. So you know, my preference would be let's educate all voters, but that's a pretty heavy lift. You know, I do what I can, but honestly, that's a heavy lift.
Now, speaking of elections, it wasn't PR, but you had some data about who voted in Cambridge, which we didn't have the last show we did. And I thought it was interesting that Cambridge voters, other than the state voted, it was a lot closer between Kennedy and Markey on the state level, but in Cambridge, Markey really prevailed. Right?
That's true. But the thing is that, you know, Cambridge voters are kind of a little bit of their own thing that in that regard.
Yeah.
I think maybe I'm going to actually maybe pull up a little bit of
I thought that was interesting.
So let me just pop over here for now.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So we did have this primary. It was actually the day when we had our last show.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Right. So in Cambridge, it was really more than 80% for Markey versus Kennedy in the Senate primary race.
Yeah.
Whereas statewide, it was a lot closer.
Right.
So I don't know if I really had meant to kind of trim this one down a little bit here. Mm-hmm. So many of these races were unopposed, which I find sad that we're in that kind of situation.
Well, the other one that's interesting is the governor's council, because there was a lot of stuff through listservs about Helena, you passed it. It's back up there. And she did well in Cambridge. She beat Terrence Kennedy.
Yeah, right. Okay, that's right.
Yeah.
The thing is that Fontes was sort of being promoted because of racial identity, very much the sort of the Our Revolution contingent. We're sort of putting it out there.
Okay,
vote for this person here. Terrence Kennedy, he's one of those neoliberal, old-time establishment.
Yeah, he's been around forever, hasn't he? Yeah.
Right. So Cambridge just sucks up that rhetoric like a sponge. Well,
I read a little bit more about it. I don't think it was that,
Yeah. Right. But the thing is that I don't think that too many people actually know much about the Governor's Council or even what it does.
Anyway, so right. Well, that's the whole point. I think people were awakened to it. So, yeah.
Yeah. So they get a little bit of that. But, for the rest of the state, it was,
No contest. Yeah.
Or I should say for the rest of the district, the sixth district, it went for Terrence Kennedy. So the incumbent wins. And of course, the incumbent usually wins. So no shock there.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, and honestly, if the moment it starts to seem like that is in doubt, that's when the incumbent usually pours a lot of extra money into the campaign to ensure the victory. Another one that was of some interest locally for us here was up in the state representative in the 24th Middlesex District. And I think the numbers I have here are actually for Cambridge are the final numbers for the state. That they haven't posted the final official numbers yet. So those are sort of election day totals. Or day after election.
Why is that one interesting to you?
Well, because the thing is, Jennifer Fries was actually the Cambridge candidate who was sort of trying to unseat the incumbent, Dave Rogers.
The incumbent is Dave Rogers. Okay.
Yeah, and Jennifer actually beat him handily in the two precincts that are part of Cambridge, but most of the district is outside of Cambridge.
Right.
So actually Dave Rogers won pretty easily. So again, some of that is just indicative of the fact that geography does play a significant role in people's making these decisions.
Absolutely.
I'll just mention here at the very, very end here.
I know.
It has nothing to do with Cambridge.
I know,
It's the interesting thing, and it is going to, and I think we discussed this a little bit last time. In the fourth congressional district, it was Auchincloss, who won, but only with 22.4% of the vote. The next closest candidate with 21.1%.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's being kind of cast as a fine example of how the splitting of the quote progressive unquote vote somehow led to the and it's interesting, like they say that moderate, that Auchincloss moderate, as if somehow that's the Cambridge equivalent of conservative, which I find kind of funny.
Well, but Becky Grossman was more moderate too. So I think she, if 1/3 of her votes had gone to Jesse Rimmel, that's who would be the representative. I mean, it was all women after Jake Auchincloss. All women
Yeah, and quite predictably, that race in the fourth district is now being used as kind of the poster child
for the ranked choice
voting, which is going to be on the ballot.
How did you get your ballot? Where did you get that from?
A ballot.
I saw that you have it
through the miracle of technology here. This came in the mail today, and you'll probably be getting yours.
Except it took me, 6 weeks, 8 weeks to get my ballot for the primary? So who knows?
Yeah, well, the thing is they just send these things all out in mass. And the thing is, they're not individually addressed. It's pretty much one per household. So the mailman just has a big stack of them and just drops them off.
This is ballot questions information.
This is just ballot questions.
Thank you.
And there are two ballot questions. One is that very weird one having to do with right to fix your car, which
it's
is
not weird.
What's weird about it is the advertising on the television where they make it out as though if you approve this somehow it's they're going to be stealing your identity. And I thought, come on, that's give true. Me a break.
No, I listened to
By
actually,
the way, what? Also in the mail today, the first of the three, there's usually three of these things that comes out of the manager's office about undergoing taxes. Uh-huh. And I might as well mention also the participatory budgeting is back card.
I got that one. Yeah.
That has arrived here as well. So, whether you're voting in actual elections. Yeah, go ahead.
I want to make a comment on the one about repair. I listened to the state DEP have a series of webinars on reuse and repair. And they had speakers from various, I can't bring up their names, now you'd know them. And they were all very in support of that because of reuse and trying to get the life cycle of products. So it's a serious issue.
I agree.
It goes beyond cars. It goes to computers, yeah. And being able to fix things. Yeah.
Right. So. You know, and I am absolutely.
Right. You're a tinker.
I tinker. I like fixing things for sport. I mean, to me, it's fun. So I would absolutely.
So I would say vote yes on that and vote yes on ranked choice voting.
Yeah, no, I'm going to vote double yes on those ones myself. But the thing is that the maybe this is sort of a preview of years to come, because there's going to come a day, and you know that because you and I went to a conference once on driverless vehicles.
Oh,
there will come a day. Yeah, on autonomous vehicles.
Yeah, it is. No, you,
I don't know that really is going to come about. I think that you'll have a lot of driver assist features. We already have that.
We already have that, yeah.
Right, but the thing is that if that kind of weird future were to happen, there's no way on earth that you really want to entrust repairs to you and your friend Billy out in the backyard. You know, because
but I don't think that's what's going to happen. It's really for these independent shops that you see all over Cambridge that are not authorized dealerships that cannot do certain things, which I thought there was a question a few years ago on this that got passed, but this goes beyond that or something. I don't know. I don't know all the
details. I mean, the thing is that, you know, I remember when cars were starting first to get equipped with their little computers.
It
was like a test block. So the way you would diagnose problems is you had to have the special device that you could plug in, and then it would basically determine what was wrong with your car. That sounds great, right? But the thing is that the average mechanic down the street didn't have it.
Planned obsolescence, that's what's going on.
Yeah, well, that was sort of a way of also ensuring that only the dealership could actually do the work. So I think this has been going on for decades.
And now it's because they want you to just replace things and buy new stuff. And that's getting us into so much trouble anyway. So
And again, as you know, I drive a 40-year-old vehicle.
We know that. You always see it parked. We know you don't drive it, but
I drive it. Believe me,
are you renting out space for someone that's home?
No. The zealots haven't yet taken away my right to park on the street. Yeah.
Oh, good.
They're working on it.
That's true.
Yeah. Right. All right. So.
Speaking of. I know we want to talk about the city manager, but the shared street thing. Because I did submit a comment yesterday, which may be too late, on the whole proposed, you know, those new streets are proposing.
And, yeah.
Mentioning that I thought it was all, I mean, I didn't say ridiculous, but anyway, they only allow you two answers. Yes, it works. Plan needs more work. So I put plan needs more work. But so Joe Barr was asked about that. He had to come up from the basement or something. And he did say, at least what I heard, was that most of their responses have not been positive. I mean, I'm paraphrasing. In other words, they've got to rethink this. So that actually encouraging to me.
I think that this is something should be in constant state of feedback
Those streets, like we mentioned that, like Howard Street, it's a two-way, you can barely go by with a car.
Right, that's a duck and cover street. Yeah,
and that's a proposed street. Give me a break.
Well, I mean, it probably also means you just have to take away all the parking, you know, and that affects people, because not all of us were blessed with driveways.
Well, even if it wasn't parking, I believe in either maybe certain times of year, close the street, except for people that have driveways have to get in.
Right.
Close the street, then I'd walk in it. Like, I don't mind walking on Memorial Drive when it's closed.
Yeah. My considered opinion on this is that there are some streets, and some of them are in place now, which are naturals for shared streets, like Blanche Street, you know, which actually hasn't really seen what it could be.
These are little sections.
Could you make a portion of Church Street? Palmer Street is certainly one of those. There are some others.
I mean, I could see not allowing cars in certain.
Yeah, and you could select a number of streets that are kind of neighborhood streets in various parts of the city.
Not some of these proposed, just because some.
Right.
This is a good idea.
Yeah, but I think a lot of this is, and I think we've said this before, but I think a lot of this is just, it's basically the bicycle plan.
It's the cyclists and the people that hate cars.
Yeah. Being made real in a kind of an indirect way. So they're like saying, well, we don't want to wait 5 years for the plan to roll out here. So let's just push this through now. And the reason why I can say that with some certainty is that I know the names of the people who are advocating. And I say, yep, same people. So Okay, so
does that dovetail into the cycling ordinance, which I have to admit, I've never really read. I don't know what it entails. I guess it came up
in the final. I think there's actually a legal question about the
really?
The appropriateness of the cycling safety ordinance. And it basically it says the manager shall do this. And if the manager, you know, basically gives only the least amount of flexibility to the city manager and the city departments in making determinations about this. So in a certain sense, it's basically the city council who passed the ordinance basically saying, Mr. Manager, you no longer have the right to make decisions about what constitutes best plans for transportation.
So what were the votes last night then? Is this already an ordinance?
Amendments. There was an amendments to it.
One was 5-3 and one was 6-1.
Yeah, I honestly, I didn't read through all. I'll confess to that.
So the amendments, so the ordinance exists. When does it go in effect?
It exists. It's in effect now. But the thing is that, you know, what they're basically saying, you shall do this by such and such a date.
Oh.
So there were some specific amendments like that.
Oh, okay.
Councilor Toomey had put in an order basically wanting to, which actually prevailed. It was sort of embedded in the report.
Oh, that was the 5-3 one, I think. The Cambridge.
And it kind of puts a little bit of a hold on Cambridge Street, sort of the Cambridge part of Cambridge Street, rather than basically saying, let's just get rid of all the parking, whatever. Because, you know, as one of the councilors, I think it was Denise Simmons pointed out, there are no parking garages to speak of up there. So the businesses along Cambridge Street are absolutely dependent on the metered parking right along Cambridge Street. You know, the residents, you know, they can either walk there or they can park on the side street with their regular resident permit, right? But, you know, so there's an issue here. And, but, you know, and again, I don't want to go harp on the whole business about the cyclists, but there is a certain zeal to them that says, we know what is best and you shall do it. And the city councilors basically are suffering from Craig Kelly illness, which is, you know, the phenomenon that says that if you even slightly deviate from what this particular lobby wants, we're going to run you out of office.
Why do you call that Craig Kelly?
Because Craig Kelly is a person who was arguably the most cycling oriented councilor ever, but he didn't agree with the particulars that this is what they wanted.
We miss his input.
Yeah. And he was defeated in the most recent election.
I know.
While other people who basically said yes to anything and everything that particular lobby wanted managed to do better. So you think the councilors aren't going to pay attention to that? Yeah, of course they're going to. You know, so it's a lot of heavy-handedness politically that's going on there, and you know, and that's not the only issue where that happens, but that was a big one.
I know.
So, by the way, just as sort of a side note here, there was a proposal that's only marginally related to, it was made subject to the charter right by Simmons, but to redefine some of the streets in Harvard Square, close some streets, one-way reversals in order to, you know, again, supposedly because of the COVID-19 and accommodation for...
Well, it was also the bicycling accident.
But the bicycling accident, I think, was addressed rather well by doing the lane reduction. They put in the white funny posts along Mass Ave. You know, and I think, and I felt at the time that that would work well, and they did it, and I think it's going to work fine, you know.
I saw one of those posts somewhere completely knocked off, so I don't know.
That happens all over the place.
Okay, you know? All right, whatever.
So we should really address the manager issue, because I think this is something that's
the last
sort of been made. Yeah, I mean, the affordable housing overlay passed to a second reading. There wasn't a whole lot really.
I don't want to talk about that. I know how you feel about it. I don't feel that way.
But so the thing is, the manager's contract, you know, that's something that was sort of a big deal. And they had to inform him by September 14th, which was yesterday, of their intention to extend it.
So,
I had hoped it would have happened a little bit earlier, but this is not a council that seems to understand the concept of clock. Right. So it fell to Councilor Simmons to work directly with the manager to kind of negotiate some kind of an understanding for a contract. And, and originally it was going to be a 24-month extension, which then got dropped to 18 months, apparently with the blessing of the manager. Meanwhile, some of the Residence Alliance kind of people were saying, like, no, everybody, you should save 1 year only with a 6 month option. So those counselors.
What's the difference? 18 months, what's the difference?
It's a matter of which particular political group you want to play to. Okay. To me, 18 months, honestly, the process of seeking the next manager itself was going to consume such a portion of that. But the thing is, what made it interesting in the wee hours of the morning was the specifics in the contract. Now, I have put up the words of the contract on my website for many years, for Bob Healy, Richie Rossi, and now Louis DePasquale. And in fact, in one rather spectacular example where my name came up on the floor of the council, where they had to amend the contract several years into it, Bob Healy noted that there was an indemnification clause that had been left out.
Wow.
And he discovered that only by looking at it on my website. And then the council had to change it, because what it meant was, if there was a lawsuit, and there were lawsuits against the manager, that he might be personally responsible financially for any damages or whatever. Sure. So they had to fix that. So there is at least some history that they don't always get every T crossed and I dotted. Okay.
And all that right.
So the thing is, the manager talked with Councilor Simmons, the word went to the city solicitor, language came out, it had a few glitches, and there was some confusion in there too.
Yeah, like, I didn't listen to any of that because
the current contract allows for 2.5% cost of living adjustments annually, which is what's pretty much sort of typical for city workers, right? So nothing unusual about that, really. But the specifics of the contract extension was that at the time of signing that there would be a 2.5% increase, and then went on to July 1st, and then the following year on July 1st, even though the contract ends 4 days later. Mm. Now I look at that and I said, okay, well, that's kind of a parting gift, because then you go out with a salary scale, you get, and that works into your pension. Okay.
Yeah.
So I thought that was a little weird. But on the other hand, it didn't bother me that much, but it was a little weird. And then you could hear some counselors really kind of going back and forth, going, what's
about
going
the date?
Here?
Yeah, I was wondering, I listened to that, like July 5th, July 8th. I didn't understand any of that.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, if it was strictly 18 months, it would end July 8th, but just adding on 18 months from the existing contract. Anyway, it was they were playing kind of fast and loose, but in the end, I think it's fair to say, that there had already been an understanding amongst at least five counselors that they were going to be okay with it. And that this is what the manager wanted. And maybe there is some truth to the suggestion that the manager wanted to get the extra increase there. Because honestly, I think that if you're doing a good job as a manager in the midst of the biggest catastrophic situation in 50 years in the city, and you've got half of the city council is basically treating you like you're some sort of schmuck. I'd feel a little insulted by
that. Say
behavior.
That word on CCTV.
I think we've just did actually.
Yeah.
So anyway, maybe there is a little bit of like, okay, you want to throw me out ultimately here when I'm doing a good job? Fine. On the other hand, maybe, Louis wasn't going to work forever anyway. So who knows, So I don't know exactly how to interpret it, but the bottom line is they agreed, they passed the order. Of course, it ain't a contract until you sign,
right?
So, there could be, I suppose, some change to that, but they did inform.
Was it unanimous?
No.
Two people.
In the end, it was it was reported
somebody
differently
was
in different
absent or whatever.
Dennis Carlin, I believe, was gone yet
he
by
left.
Then
yeah.
But in the, if you go to the city clerk's page, it makes it look like it was a 6-3 vote, but I think it was 6-2-1 with predictably Zondervan and Sabrina Wheeler basically would prefer to install a Martian rather than Louis at this point. So that was that, and so it's essentially done. So at some point, there will, I think, by popular demand, they will probably be a call for an evaluation of the manager, which they should have been doing, and they
haven't
been doing.
Right, I did hear that part, and that makes sense. There hasn't been any accountability type thing.
Well, I don't know. Yes, and you know, this, I think about that. I say, when I've been there for evaluations of Bob Healy, back going back to 1993, which were just, it was just a nonsense show.
Okay.
You know, to me, you know, I'm going to make a point here, and some can disagree with this, which is that the manager is in a constant state of evaluation by these counselors, you know, every single week.
You know, you're right about that. I was just thinking that in some sense, he's always out there.
He's always out there.
He's now. It's like, he's
Really, so are they going to like put together a questionnaire and a formal thing, and they're going to do some statistical analysis on how well he has met this, and we're going to do score things, and well, he gets an 8 out of 10 for this, he gets a 1 out of 10 on municipal broadband response. Is that really what they mean by an evaluation? Because honestly, I think he has been fully evaluated in place the whole time through. But yeah, if there is to be a formal evaluation because the contract said it, then they should at least do that much. All right. But then, you know, the process, you know, if indeed they're going to seek us the next manager, even if it were Louis again, but I don't think that would be the case.
Oh, no.
But the thing is, you know, they have to kick off the intergalactic search.
Yep.
And that's not easy. Yep. And you usually hire a search firm, and there are reasons why some people will or will not choose to seek the job.
Yep.
And, you know, and you got to do everything by the book, and it takes a lot of time. I think Councillor McGovern pointed out that even when we did it all the right way with Louis last time, it was 8 months minimum. And it probably, with this group, it would probably be more. And the notion that somehow, don't you know, it's a pandemic and everybody's out of work and there'll be 1,000 candidates.
Oh, yeah, right.
No. Yeah, and another thing, too, is, as you know, just to sort of help him out on this, the thing is there's a truth here, too, which is that you're not going to usually come in as somebody with no experience. You've probably already been a manager somewhere. And you want to be able to carry over your pensionable years, which means you typically will see Massachusetts candidates as opposed to candidates from far away. But they may not want that. So they're going to have some issues there. So
anyway, so we're winding down here, Robert.
Yeah.
We should tell people we're not going to be here till the first Tuesday in October.
Yeah, for the time being, we'll be doing first and third Tuesdays.
Right. So... I guess we'll stay tuned, and we didn't get to see any of your photos. We'll do that next time, maybe.
That's right. But anyway, go to the website. You can see them.
All right. Bye-bye.
Anyway, see ya.